Dads on the air, we're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our guest today is Max Michel. Max is a security risk management consultant and a managing director of 2M and Associates. He's had an interesting history. He's been the manager of a bar and restaurant in Singapore. He's had executive positions in the hospitality industry. He's a former nurse and a former police officer. And today we're going to be speaking to Max about living with prostate cancer. So, Max, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you for having me.
Max, we're going to just run through your personal history of being involved with prostate cancer. We might start at the beginning. You know, when did you first suspect that there might be a problem?
About 3 years ago, I was having what they call nocturia, and that is where you're going to the toilet frequently during the night. So I was going up to six times a night, and I knew that I had a problem. That took me to a GP. Coincidentally, it was about the time that I was coming back to Australia from Singapore. So I saw my general practitioner here in Sydney, and we arranged to see a urology clinic at the Prince of Wales Hospital.
You knew something was wrong, perhaps has a little bit to do with your background in nursing, that you suspected you might need medical intervention?
Yes, I'm sure that's correct. In fact, when I was nursing, I worked in the urology ward, so I had some first-hand knowledge of it.
And what was your experience when you went to see the GP?
He was good. He understood that, like most GPs, you have to have a PSA reading and a digital examination, but really beyond that, many of them are not skilled in this area, so I more or less asked him to send me to the clinic.
And the clinic, is that also covered under Medicare, or is that a private arrangement?
It's a public hospital, so it's covered by Medicare.
That first experience of going to the GP, I imagine it would be pretty uncomfortable?
Yeah, it is, I guess, but you got to look at it objectively. I would say that going to a public clinic in a big hospital has its negatives, if you'd like me to tell you about them.
I would.
Well, the first thing is I had to wait 6 months before I could see a doctor. When I did see the doctor, he was a registrar, not a specialist. And it wasn't for another 6 weeks or so that we ended up doing a biopsy. So all in all, I probably had to wait 6 to 9 months before I got a diagnosis.
6 to 9 months, well, that's long enough to really create a problem in itself, isn't it?
Well, it could be, particularly if it was an aggressive style cancer, which it, fortunately at this stage it wasn't. But I was able to see a specialist a couple of months after that. So my advice to anybody listening today is that get their general practitioner to refer them privately to a urology specialist and pay the $200 or whatever it is for that first visit. Then if you're financially embarrassed or whatever, you can then talk about that with him and may become a public patient where he would also do surgery.
You were well aware of the financial implications of going down this path, and I guess you were also aware that getting a prostate test might in fact lead to a change in your life.
Yes. You know, when you're told that you've got cancer, whatever type of cancer it is, it's the first thing it does is give you a bit of a shock. But then when you sit down, take a step backwards and perhaps analyse it, you need to then go to the next step and find out, well, how bad is it?
Because when a lot of people hear the word cancer, they immediately feel that they're going to die straight away, don't they? That's a common belief.
Absolutely. And cancer is not a death sentence. I think that's the first message we've got to get across. But having said that, we still have to be realistic about the statistics, and the fact remains that well over 3,000 men die every year from prostate cancer in Australia. And that's more than the number of deaths from breast cancer for women.
That's something that's perhaps not appreciated out there. I mean, we hear a lot about breast cancer and fundraising for breast cancer. Just one example is the Glenn McGrath Foundation has the middle day of their Sydney Test match is pink, and it's all raising money for breast cancer. There's nothing like that for prostate cancer, is there?
Not that I'm aware of, Bill, but there should be, I think.
So you said, yes, 3,000 men a year die from prostate cancer. I guess many more than that are diagnosed every year. In your story, we're at the stage where the specialist has, in fact, said you do have a diagnosis of cancer. So what was your reaction to that?
I was aware through my own medical training that there's gradings to the cancer, that it could be a low-grade, non-aggressive tumour to a high-grade, aggressive tumour. And I had this feeling that it was the former, and, of course, that's what I was hoping for, and I wanted to find, that was my next step, to find out those two things, the grading and the aggressiveness.
And then what was the answer?
The answer was that from the biopsy it came back that I had a low-grade cancer, and that it was a slow-growing one, and there was no need for any medical intervention at that time.
And that's very common, isn't it? I mean, generally speaking, prostate cancer is slow-growing. It affects men perhaps mainly over 60, would you say?
Yeah, I would, yeah.
And that and it is slow-growing, so it's not something for every man to get worried about, but some men, like yourself, have been confronted with something a bit more serious then.
Well, it's probably incorrect for us to say that it's always slow growing. It might not necessarily be that. And that's why I'm advocating that the person sees a specialist in the first instance. You need to determine not just that whether or not you've got cancer, but given that you have, you need to determine how bad it is. Has it spread outside the prostate? Is there any evidence of metastasis? They're all the questions that you're going to answer in the first instance.
Yes, I'm sure there are a number of questions to ask the specialist, though. Your question was, is it one of these slow-moving ones, or is it an aggressive?
Yeah, it was, and he answered it by telling me that it was a low-grade, low-aggressiveness. And the treatment for that is what they call a wait-and-see surveillance program. And it's exactly as it says it is. They wait and they monitor it every 6 months. In my particular case, the specialist put it in writing that he didn't believe that it would ever progress from that state.
So that was the good news.
That was the good news, as we now know it did.
Okay, we're going to take a short break now. We're up to the stage of finding from our guest, Max Michel, the progress after finding you've been diagnosed with prostate cancer, and we'll find out what happens next. We're going to listen now to Israel Kamakawiwo Ole, who is an Hawaiian, unfortunately now deceased, but he has this beautiful song called Over the Rainbow, and that leads into What a Wonderful World.
Okay, this one's for Gabby. Far behind me.
trouble melts like lemon drops. High above the chimney top, that's where you find me, oh, somewhere over the rainbow. Bluebirds fly and the dream that you did to, oh, why can't I? Well, I see trees of green and red roses too. I watch them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Well, I see skies of blue and I see clouds of white and the brightness of day. I like the dark and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people passing by. I see friends shaking and singing, how do you do? They really say, I love you. I hear babies cry and I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than we'll know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Like a lemon drops high above the chimney top, that's where you find me, oh, somewhere over the rainbow, way up high. And the dream that you dare to, why, oh, why can I
And that was Israel Kamakar Wiwo Ole singing Over the Rainbow and What a Wonderful World. And our guest today is Max Michel, who's talking to us about living with prostate cancer. So, Max, after getting this diagnosis, what was the next step then?
The medical people arranged for me to have an MIR of the prostate and also a bone scan. Unfortunately, the bone scan showed what appeared to be a tumour in the left femur, the top of the left femur. Now I'm really starting to worry because that's evidence of metastasis into the bone.
Metastasis means that the cancer is spreading somewhere else in the body, I take it.
Yes. And prostate cancer, as I understand it, spreads to the bones. And when you've got secondary, it's a different story altogether, and your level of enthusiasm somewhat diminishes.
Enthusiasm is, you have a general tiredness?
No, I was never really sick or tired, but I knew that once it was in the bone, that was a different situation and would require a different treatment, probably hormonal therapy.
Well, in your case, you didn't have to have the hormonal treatment, fortunately.
Yeah, in my case, I didn't have. This was not a tumour, as was originally told to me.
Was that just a matter of luck, or was it another diagnosis, or how did you sort out this problem?
I changed doctors and went to a very good doctor at Prince Wales Hospital, Dr. Andrew Richards. And as soon as he saw it, he called it a red herring. He said, I don't think that that is a tumour in your femur. However, I will sit down with my radiation oncologist and discuss it with him, and we will let you know as soon as we have a look at it. And to cut a long story short, they did that, let me know, and they both agreed that it wasn't a tumour.
So once again, some good news.
Yeah, back to the wait and see.
But then they still had the aggressive prostate cancer to deal with.
Well, it wasn't known at this stage. Dr. Richards told me that I would have to have a second biopsy 12 months later as a precaution, but he didn't expect any changes. Unfortunately for me, it changed dramatically and became much more aggressive and became a higher grade cancer over a short space of time. So he told me I would have to have medical intervention more or less straight away.
So at that point, he would have discussed with you what intervention is available.
He did. There were three options. One was radical prostatectomy. And number two is something called brachytherapy. And the third one was external beam radiotherapy. With the radical prostatectomy, that's removal of the prostate completely. And a lot of people go for that one because they don't want the cancer to be left in their body. But obviously, for them to do that, they have to make sure that it's localized within the prostate. The second option, brachytherapy, is where they implant radioactive seeds into your prostate. I went and had a test done for that by the radiation oncologist, and it was shown that my prostate was too wide, and he couldn't guarantee that the beams would affect the outside part of the prostate where the cancer happened to be. So that option was taken away from me. And then the third one was external beam radiotherapy, where you have to go every day, every weekday for 8 weeks, and have a treatment of about 10 minutes at a time. So I was now left with two options.
Well, at least it made the choice a little bit easier. You only had to pick one between two then at this stage.
Yes. I mean, whichever treatment you have, there are significant side effects. People need to be aware of that. The most common one, I think, is probably some sort of sexual dysfunction, probably some urinary problems, if not incontinence, and some type of urinary issues. And you can have bowel problems as well. So there are side effects, and you need to know about them before you make your decision. But what I did was I got a couple of friends, and you were one of them, and another chap, Jeff. The three of us got around and had a dinner and a couple of drinks, and we thrashed out which one of the options we thought was the best, and we all went for external beam radiotherapy, and that's what I did.
And was any sort of guarantee given to you by the doctors as to the effectiveness of this treatment?
They can't give you a 100% guarantee, but they can give you a 92%. There are people that don't respond to it, but they're rare. And they're looking at 8 to 10 years. Free of cancer if you have external beam radiotherapy or brachytherapy. Of course, if you have a radical prostatectomy, it should never come back because it's gone and you have no prostate anymore.
So the prostatectomy we're talking about is where the surgery actually removes the prostate from your body.
That's right. That's right. And during that surgery, you can have damage to the sexual nerves. And that's why a lot of men have this sexual dysfunction afterwards.
A lot of people seem to have the prostatectomy. I think some of the more famous people in our community, Alan Jones and a few others, I think Rupert Murdoch even, a few, there have been a few. Why would people choose the radical prostatectomy where you actually cut the prostate out?
Probably because they don't want to have cancer in the body. It's a relatively expensive operation. The people that are supposed to be the best at it are the specialists at St. Vincent's Hospital, private hospital. And I have heard of a figure of $20,000 on top of your private insurance. Mm. So why would they? I guess they consider that they're old enough, they don't want to have children anymore. And a little bit of sexual dysfunction is not going to bother them too much anyway. And they don't have to have the fear that it's going to come back.
Okay, so you went for the X-ray treatment. What's been the outcome of that?
Well, I don't know yet. I had this treatment at the Mater Hospital in Crow's Nest. And I have to say they were very, very good. Very caring and very humanitarian type of culture there. What we now do is I have to have a PSA taken every 3 months, and it's only 3 months since I finished it. And they will monitor that PSA reading over a period of 18 months to 2 years. And they would expect that by the end of 2 years, it should be zero. If it isn't, then it hasn't been as successful as they would have liked. So that's in front of us now.
And how are you feeling generally now that you've been through all the treatment, you've been through the whole prostate experience? How do you feel now?
I've always felt pretty good. I will say that there are side effects, but I was fortunate that my side effects appeared to be less than most people. But I did get some stinging of the urine. I mean, after all, they're putting radiation into your body, so they're basically microwaving your prostate. So of course there's going to be side effects. But overall, it wasn't really bad, and now I'm into my fourth month since I had it, and I continued to work and do everything I normally did. I have to say that the sexual thing is not as good as it used to be, but the good news is it still works. Yeah, it still works.
Yes, well, this is the real-life experience that we're trying to pass on to people is what you can expect, what the good part is, and of course there's always the downside because some 3,000 men die of prostate cancer every year. But what would you say are the main messages you want to get out to people about this condition?
I would say see a specialist for your first meeting, pay the money and go and see him in his pro after all. He has to make a living too, and don't begrudge him the $200 or $300 you might have to pay, because you've got to get that expert opinion first up. Then if you have to be treated publicly, you tell him that and arrangements are made. Don't rely on just the general practitioner's opinion, and that's no disrespect to the general practitioners. They can't be expert in everything. I would say join a support group. People are very anxious about a diagnosis of cancer, so you join this support group, and I would suggest that they will put you at ease and make you feel a lot better about it. And the third thing is, through the support group, go through the types of treatments that are available and ask them as many questions as you like, and you'll find them very supportive. And the fourth thing I would say is, don't beat yourself up about it. I mean, it's not a death sentence, and don't think in terms of the worst, think of the best case scenario.
If you have some of those early symptoms we talked about, perhaps the frequency, the urgency, in Max's case it was going to the toilet 6-7 times a night, if you have those symptoms, I think the recommendation is, particularly if you're over 60, that you start down this path and just remove it from the agenda, and you can get to Max's stage where he's really back to his normal life and carrying on. So, Max, at this stage of the program, we ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which one you picked and why you picked it?
Oh, that's a hard one, Bill. There's a lot of good songs, but you'd like me to pick one now, would you?
I would.
Okay, let's go for Jupiter then. Jupiter, the Bringer of Jollity by Gustav Holst.
And why does this mean something to you?
Well, it was the theme music for the Rugby World Cup, I think, in 99, and it's something that I find very soothing to listen to.
Okay, this is Jupiter, the Bringer of Jollity, written by Gustav Holst, and it's played by the London Philharmonic Orchestra and David Parry. And that was Jupiter, played by the London Philharmonic Orchestra and David Parry. We've come to the end of our program today. I would like to especially thank our guest, Max Michel, who's been very open and forthcoming about his prostate cancer treatment. Don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners, so you can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email and we'll be in touch. And if you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au. So, Max, thanks very much for being on the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Bill.
And we'll be back next week with another show. So until then, it's goodbye from Dads on the Air.